Greetings. You have tuned into the Better with Booze Film Club, a podcast where three film buffs watch films which they have not seen before and then foist their opinions on you, the listener. Proceed with caution and do not take their opinions as expert. They are barely professionals in their own careers. You have been warned.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Better with Booze Film Club podcast. My name is Cameron, and joining me, as per usual, are the per usuals. He prefers ketchup with his donuts. It's Glenn.
Greetings.
And she is a part-time pickle farmer. It's Sarah.
Hello.
And speaking of them, it's time for me to turn the show over to them so they can tell you what they consumed as a beverage for this episode. And we will go to Glenn.
Thank you, Cameron. This evening, we imbibed in the St. Boniface Libation Double India Pale Ale, made by the St. Boniface Brewing Company out of Ephrata, Pennsylvania. Another Commonwealth beer. Yes, this is it was a nice little double IPA. I thought it was a 8.1% ABV. And actually, I thought it was quite nice. I had never had it before. I've had a bunch of St. Boniface beers, but not this one. Yeah, what'd you think?
I thought it was nice. I had never had any St. Boniface beer and had never actually even heard of it until you brought this can here, so that's exciting. But I am a sucker for a double IPA and generally don't like beer that is below 7%, so 8% is right in that sweet spot for me. And I thought it was quite good. It was a very smooth, for being 8%, and I expected it to actually be a slightly less, lower ABV just because it was pretty smooth. It didn't taste like an 8% beer. So for that reason, I would say it was quite good. Yeah. I thought it was refreshing.
That's the review.
What a refreshing review. And now on to our film. This week we watched the 1976 made-for-television film Sherlock Holmes in New York. Yes, that Sherlock Holmes, and yes, that New York. Our film opens with a confrontation between Holmes and his arch-nemesis, the master criminal Moriarty. Here, Holmes is played by none other than James Bond himself, Roger Moore. Moriarty is played by the master director and occasional actor John Huston. Holmes infiltrates Moriarty's secret headquarters in order to inform him that Holmes has destroyed his criminal ring, capturing all of his main henchmen. Moriarty decides to do the whole arch-villain thing and changes his focus to punishing Holmes. I guess up to this point, that was only sort of a side gig. Holmes then returns home to the warm embrace of Dr. Watson. Here played in old school bumbling oaf style by John Steed himself, Patrick McNee. During their conversation, Holmes deduces that the way Moriarty plans on getting to Holmes is by going after the one thing that seemingly means something to him, known to Holmes as, quote, the woman. Yes, for you Sherlockians out there, Moriarty plans on going after Irene Adler, the only woman and one of the few people outside of Moriarty himself who has ever bested Holmes. And so the story moves to New York, where Adler is starring in a play. Holmes and Watson arrive and are almost immediately in the crosshairs of Moriarty Man. The man is not a particularly smart one, it's just that Holmes and Watson are about as careful as a group of frat boys on a spring break. The dynamic duo meet with Adler, and Holmes, being Holmes, immediately deduces that Adler's boy has been kidnapped by Moriarty. A note then arrives telling Holmes that the police will try to enlist his services to help them solve a crime, and if he should choose to help them, the boy will die. Nice to see police incompetence works just about the same level on both sides of the Atlantic. The police are quick on the draw, and Holmes is immediately found by an NYPD inspector and the head of a bank in New York. They inform him that a huge amount of gold bars were stolen from the bank, and that in a few days it will be discovered, and the world economy will be in turmoil. Holmes turns down the request as per the note, but fear not. Watson is momentarily and very much accidentally helpful, and Holmes realizes that if he solves the kidnapping, he can then solve the bank robbery. Why this didn't occur to Sherlock without prompting, one can only guess, but nonetheless, he is on the case. It should come as no surprise, it doesn't prove much of a mystery for the world's greatest mystery solver. The boy is discovered rather easily and rescued, and so Holmes is able to turn his attention to the robbery. I won't give away any of the details of the robbery in case someone actually wants to watch the film. Suffice to say, it's a sort of very Moriarty plan and quite clever in its own over-the-top sort of way. Anyway, Holmes once again foils Moriarty, and he once again helps Irene Adler, this time once again rescuing the boy, who may or may not be Holmes' son. For the record, I'm going with not. In a final confrontation with Moriarty. And as a reward for all of his services, he receives a photo of the boy. Great. No gold bars available then? Whatever. And this is more or less the story of Sherlock Holmes in New York. And we will move on to our moment of optimism, where we each pick something we actually liked about the film. I'm seeing slightly worried faces from the opposite side of our recording table. So I suppose I'll start, and I will go with... I thought John Huston was not bad as Professor Moriarty. He was slightly on the older side, but Moriarty is old in some of the stories. And this does take place a little later, kind of in the canon of Sherlock Holmes' stories.
It would be after Sherlock, the return of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say John Huston is okay as Professor Moriarty.
There you go.
And yeah, that's about it.
Something.
I may not share the same rosy attitude about John Huston as Moriarty,
it's because I have so many problems with the other characters.
Well, yeah,
he shines in comparison.
True,
and he's not in it that much.
Let's see. Nope. Bright moment in this. It was short.
It was actually not that short. It's one of the longer films.
It had Charlotte Rampling in it, and yes. I like Charlotte Rampling.
She was actually not bad, although she was terrible as who she was supposed to be, but...
She was not the Irene Adler that people who read or watch Sherlock Holmes would expect.
100%.
But
she was
like a
fainting goat.
Yeah,
she was very much shrinking violet, fainting goat, all that.
Every time anyone made a loud noise, she just passed out
down on the floor. Somebody please pick that up again.
Who was an opera singer, you would have thought she would have been anyway.
And I had Charlotte Rampling. I just like her.
Yeah.
Honestly, Glenn sort of stole my moment of optimism. And to be perfectly honest, I haven't actually seen her in anything else, but there is definitely something about
her. She's really good.
That is like, and I didn't like the role she was in whatsoever. I thought this Irene was written terribly, but you could tell that there was a very, very good actress delivering a very, very crappy character. And the character was just not written well. But
well,
she
very good
herself.
Character, just poorly written.
Yes, that's a fair way to say it. A terrible interpretation of an otherwise great character. Yeah. Which I think this suffered from a lot of that kind of stuff. But
Almost every single character.
But she, the actress, there was just something about her every time she was on screen. Like, you could not help but be drawn to her and her voice and her performance. Like, she did a great job with very little to work with.
Yeah.
So I would say she would also be my moment of optimism, and I will go seek out more of her work because she does seem like she is probably much better than this.
My gosh, an incredible career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always been busy. Always. Still alive and still working.
That's great.
Actually, I didn't mind the detective. He was okay.
David Huddleston, the American.
Yeah, his accent went in.
He wasn't
and out,
in it for
sort of.
Long, but yeah.
Yeah, because he was Irish and then he wasn't
supposed,
Irish.
I think he was supposed to be an Irish police
Irish cop
from New York, which didn't really. There was a. Okay, let's just go on to the the general discussion. Fun fact, by the way, and I've now watched it twice in one day. Apparently, Charles Durning appears at some point. And really? I did not see him either time I watched it. Yes, he apparently is an uncredited detective somewhere.
Well, okay.
So
I didn't see him.
Nope.
I'm apparently very bad at Where's Waldo, but and I refuse to watch it a third time to see if I can find him.
Don't do it. Don't do it to yourself.
Okay, well, where to start? Roger Moore, Sherlock Holmes. Not great casting.
No.
And to his credit, when they first offered him the chance to play Sherlock Holmes, he turned it down.
Oh.
Which he probably should have stuck with.
Yes.
But he apparently read the script and thought it was, there was some clever funniness to it, which I guess got lost at some point while filming it, because it was, it was not funny.
No.
No.
I mean, the gold storyline was cleverish.
Cleverish. Yeah. It's a big
But it was only about 50% of the overall thing.
Yeah.
And here's my problem with Roger Moore. Well, I think also because he's so associated with James Bond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's just not a Sherlockian type.
He's not.
Actor or character. The hair bothered me the most.
Boy, the hair.
I'm like, the hair is just awful. It's very poofy 1970s Roger Moore hair, which is so not Sherlock Holmes.
And the hats were worse.
Well, some of the hats were fine. The one hat in particular was not great. Everybody else's hats were fine. The hat game was on point for a lot of the characters, but that's damning with incredibly faint praise. There was a chase scene.
There was, well, if you can call it that. There was more of a leisurely trot down the street that culminated in people ending up in the same place. It's not so much of a chase scene.
Well, whatever. not a great James Bond. Sherlock Holmes. In McNee's defense, that is the portrayal of Watson until it was sort of reimagined not long after this would have been filmed. I mean, that is the classic Nigel Bruce portrayal.
A little slow on the uptake.
Kind of, you know, bumbling and very shocked and although he's in the book too. He is a little like that in the book.
Yes, he nailed it.
I would say that Nigel Bruce is almost closer to the book's Watson than what you currently get as Watson, but I think it's because the book Watson is sort of, you're kind of unbelieving of his character in the book because he's supposed to be this military doctor and he couldn't be that stupid because he works at a very prestigious hospital. He was a military doctor.
He partly exists to make Sherlock Holmes look more brilliant.
Correct. And he's also basically there as the chronicler of Sherlock Holmes. All of the stories are told by John Watson.
Exactly.
Is basically how you get the stories. They're his stories that he's telling about Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
But he does, he is not, anyway.
Yeah.
It was fine. He was annoying, but he was okay.
It might have been with the few lines he had, he might have been for me another possible bright moment.
Could be.
Just because I like Patrick McNee, and he actually didn't make me think I was watching John Steed the whole time.
Correct.
You know, where I was watching Sherlock, you know, Bond the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, my other problem with the script, I think, is that they tried to make a romantic story out of it, which goes almost wholly against the Sherlock character, who is known basically for somebody who has no real human emotions to speak of.
Right.
There was some suggestion that he had feelings for Irene Adler in the books, but it's very subtle. I mean,
I think he has more admiration.
He has admiration for her. They never would have had a relationship to speak. Well, she left before they could, really. But so that whole thing doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. And like he's very emotional in a lot of this movie, which makes more sense if he was playing a James Bond character.
Sure.
Although even James Bond's not supposed to be that sort of.
Yeah.
It was strange.
And I thought that even because I like the Sherlock Holmes filmography, the various takes on him. I liked the Sherlock show. I did like the RDJ for the first movie. I didn't care for the second movie, but I did really think the first movie was very fun.
I would have liked it better if they just made a new character.
Yeah,
honestly. He wasn't playing Sherlock Holmes. He was just playing a cool
inspector.
Victorian sort of action hero figure.
But every time you have seen him, he is extremely clever. And the plots and the villains are very smart. It's a very, very, very intelligent storyline. And the Moriarty in the Sherlock series is a phenomenal take on the character.
Yeah.
Andrew Scott.
Yes, I think he does excellent. Well,
Andrew Scott is good in anything I've ever seen Andrew Scott in.
So this just felt very dumbed down in a sense. Like, even those moments that are supposed to be his sort of quote-unquote aha moments are just like, there's a dust line there. There must have been a photograph. Okay, great.
Yeah. Like, it was almost like it was made for nowhere. 1970s television.
Yeah, almost does feel that way.
It's like, what kind of dumb American storyline can we give?
And it was, like I said, it was like 70% of the movie was exposition, about what was going on. And what you mentioned something about
inexplainable
about how smart Holmes is. And in any Sherlock Holmes that I've seen in the past or read, and I've read a lot of them, he's never really behind the eight ball. It always gives the appearance, and you, the reader or the watcher, might think, oh, somebody's got the upper hand on him. But what you're not told is that he knows something you don't know.
Sure.
And in this movie, you knew everything he 100%. Knew. 100%. And yes, which was nothing.
And until, he very rarely explains himself.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
And when he does, he's usually like forced to. Here, he's just vomiting.
Exactly.
Exposition.
Yeah.
He's just obnoxious.
Exactly.
Yeah. 100%. And the whole like whisper to Watson at the end there, he's like, I removed the iron bars. How the hell did you do? What? What? Really? You're just going to keep the answer from these people just to be that guy? Okay.
Part of me almost thinks that they got to that point in the movie filming. They realize, how are we going to explain the fact that they got to this floor? And they're like, just whisper it in the ear that you snuck in and removed them. Yeah. Okay.
It's just so dumb. Yeah. And like the whole thing with him being like, well, wait a minute. If I kidnap the kid back or if I save the kid, I can suddenly work on this. No shit. Like, obviously, that's what you're going to do.
No shoot for those of us.
No shoot.
Recording it.
Yes. And it really left no suspense and no edge of your seat,
nothing
because of that.
We're just waiting for him to figure out what we figured out 20 minutes ago.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Which all goes back to the reason why John Huston is one of my favorite characters in this film.
I do get it.
Because at least he was trying to act it.
Yeah.
He was. Yeah. And the climax was just it fell flat. Everything just kind of fell flat because, I mean, at the point, you just sort of hope Moriarty's going to win because at least then we're going to have a fun twist.
Yeah. Like, he kind of does. Really? He gets away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was just a little bit of a, like, oh, okay, maybe, nope. Every time it seemed like it was going to get a little bit clever or like he was going to actually have that big twist moment, it wouldn't. It would either turn into just weird exposition that didn't make any sense or a very obvious conclusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see we've lost the will to live watching this
movie.
Well,
I mean, my problem is I'm you know, Sherlock Holmes is one of my favorite things on the face of the planet.
Sure.
And when it's not done well, it is kind of...
It's a bummer.
Like, I'm not huge on the Basil Rathbone Holmes. I don't mind it.
Mm.
But it could be more campy than... The problem, I think, with this was they should have leaned into the Roger Moore James Bond, which is to make it a little more funny and sort of campy.
Yeah.
And because you either need to do a serious sort of Holmes... Or you need to almost go in the sort of Michael Caine sort of, okay, we're just going to make this. But
just camp.
And maybe it's because it's Roger Moore. I started watching it for the first time and I'm like, that's the direction this is going to go in.
Yeah,
and it's very melodrama.
Right.
And I'm like, this
so
is
much.
Weird. It's got to turn at some point, right? And it keeps being melodrama through the whole thing.
Right. Did you see the, I'm tangent here, the 7% solution?
Yes.
Did you like that?
Yes.
I-ish. Yeah.
It's not my favorite, but I did.
It's better than this.
It is better than this.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I don't know that
also
I've watched.
Quite different.
I don't know that I've watched a Holmes adaptation that was worse than this.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the American television show they had on Elementary.
I
never watched it.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
It
was fine, but again, my thing is if you. You just don't make it Holmes. I mean, it would be an interesting story if it was like these two characters, but that you tried to sort of crowbar it into a Holmes situation.
Yeah.
I mean, like they did with basically House, the television show House. It's basically Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Yeah.
It's just done in a very different, more creative way.
Well, and I feel like Psych is sort of, because I loved Psych when I was growing up.
Psych
and
is
it
kind
also
of the comedic.
Sort of falls into the comic version of Sherlock Holmes. And I loved it. It's a fun take on it. So it is when you can take that particular Holmes-Watson dynamic and translate it into something fun and different, it can be cool. in this, it just was kind of like, okay, well, what are we trying to do here? Yeah.
I even kind of liked the one they did where they pretended he had a daughter, or no, sister.
Enola
Holmes. Mm-hmm,
with Millie Bobby Brown.
I never watched the sequel, but I mean, the first one was, it was enjoyable.
Was it?
Sure.
Yeah, I actually kind of liked it.
Hmm. Yeah, she does a very good job. And Helena Bonham Carter, honestly, the whole cast is great.
And isn't Henry Cavill
Sherlock plays Holmes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Wow.
He's kind of a beefier Holmes.
He's a very beefy Holmes.
Interesting. I'm just sad that Hugh Laurie never did Holmes. That would have been fun to see him try and pull that one off.
Well, I'm sure maybe they did. Well,
Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry as Watson.
There you go.
Well, they must have done it. They must have.
As a skit.
Yeah. Well, I know that, what's his name? Mitchell and Webb.
Oh, did they do it?
Did a skit.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Because they were two really egotistical actors who couldn't agree on who got to play Holmes or Watson. So every time the scene cut, they changed.
That's amazing.
And they got more and more angry with each other. So like there would be this, one of them would start hitting the other with like a cane.
I mean, it's
a really funny skit.
I love it.
And then they end up doing a stage adaptation at one point where they have to keep changing. I mean, it's...
That's amazing.
Nice. So the bad writing...
Terrible writing.
Probably. But, I mean, this is one of those times.
This was a low rent.
It was low rent. And it's also the struggle for me. If you're going to make a movie that's a made for television, because like the 70s, there weren't a whole lot of home stuff going on.
Yeah.
Do you do an original story or do you write a new story that's not going to be as good because it's not Arthur Conan Doyle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why write a new story when you have, you know,
so much
four novels and 56 short stories? And
yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of material to pull from.
Yeah.
But then I guess people are used to it. But I mean, in the 1970s, I don't know how many people would have been.
But also, if it's 1976 and you put Roger Moore as Sherlock Holmes, nobody can see anything except James Bond.
Yeah,
he's still making Bond at that point.
Still,
he
only had two or three movies in. This was before On Her Majesty, before The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yeah,
so
it's a strange casting choice, and so I don't know who would.
You spend your whole time just trying to wrap your brain around him trying to be Sherlock Holmes.
Although in the mid 1970s, and somebody goes. And it's an American production and somebody goes, hey, we need a famous British actor. Roger Michael Caine said no. I guess we have to go with Roger Moore.
True. Yeah.
And it's a pretty slim list.
Yeah.
So it's not the music was fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was sort of period
music.
There
wasn't much of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think one of the other things that I was thinking about that missed the mark for me that I think is very important if you're telling the Sherlock Holmes story, Holmes and Watson had no chemistry.
They didn't play off each other well.
They weren't a team. It did not strike me as two individuals who had been through a lot, understood each other, that had that dynamic, which is constant in the other versions of it.
Well, and in the stories, I think, and I may be wrong about this, but from what I remember, they're roughly the same age. Whereas they didn't really come across as the same age as this. Watson just seems like an old, befuddled.
He does. And it was an odd choice.
And Sherlock just doesn't seem like Sherlock.
No.
Although they did get the name right.
Was that his real full name?
I think his full name was William Sherlock Scott Holmes.
Okay. Mm.
I think. Because in the Sherlock adaptation with Benedict Cumberbatch, he's William Sherlock Scott Holmes.
Okay.
So I think that is the full name of him. Interestingly enough.
Yeah.
That's just good or final opinion on this. May or may not be turkey. So our rating system, for those of you who don't listen or don't remember, shame on you, is see or skip. Very simple. And there could be shades within that, but we'll start with Sarah.
This is a very solid skip for me. There's not many shades. Like there, even the redeeming factor, which was, and I keep forgetting her name, the actress.
Charlotte Rampling.
I just want to go watch other stuff by her and go watch Sherlock Holmes adaptations. So I think I'm going to go do those two things. So this is a solid skip.
Glenn.
This is a solid skip for me too. There was very little I found enjoyable in this movie.
And
yeah.
And I had to watch it twice.
Yeah, you did.
It's a pretty harsh skip for me.
Yikes.
I'm trying to
think. Who would want to watch this?
Well, the problem is it's not bad enough to be a bad movie.
No, either, it's not
bad. It's not. It's like fairly well produced for a made for television film.
Yeah, you're not going to watch it and go, God, this movie was just so badly made. You're not going to say it was bottom of the barrel produced stuff.
It's big nothing burger.
Exactly.
It's just nothing.
It was just so dull and uninteresting.
Yeah, it's like eating food that doesn't have any taste. Yeah.
And it angers me that you can make a Sherlock story that's dull and uninteresting.
It shouldn't be possible. Yeah.
So there, that's three solid skips. Big old swerve around that one.
Nope.
Don't go anywhere near it. And with that, we move into our own little bit of mystery solving.
Oh, God.
You want me to hold the chicken, huh?
What's the one thing?
Do you expect me to talk?
Why don't you just make 10 louder?
Surely you can't be serious.
Do you like apples?
I'm asking you who's on first.
Is it safe?
You talking to me?
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve?
You want answers?
Well, do you, Bunk?
Johnny, what are you rebelling against?
Shall we play a game?
Short for a stormtrooper.
What's in the box?
Hey, is it my imagination or is it getting crowded here? Yeah.
That's right. It's time for the trivia round. And much like a Moriarty plan, the solutions are so convoluted that only Holmes himself could discover them. So good luck with these two co-hosts.
Oh, God.
And this week's topic, Sherlock Holmes.
I'm screwed.
Glenn, you may have a leg up on this one.
Glenn's got a big leg up here.
Question number one. Despite dozens of short stories, Arthur Conan Doyle only wrote 4 Sherlock Holmes novels. But which one comes first and gave us our first introduction to the master consulting detective? Is that A, The Valley of Fear, B, A Study in Scarlet, C, The Hound of the Baskervilles, or D, The Sign of 4?
Oh, God.
Okay, although I think this was a short, I'm going to say A Study in Scarlet.
Okay.
What was A again?
The Valley of Fear.
I'm going to go with The Valley of Fear.
I can review A Study in Scarlet is not a short story. It is a novel, and it was the first one.
Yeah, see, nice. I'm screwed here. We're in deep doo-doo.
Appearing in 1887.
Oh, right. No.
Question number two. Sherlock Holmes's best friend and chronicler, John Watson, served as a military doctor before meeting Watson.
True.
But he was wounded in battle and sent back to England. But in which country did Watson receive his wound? Was that A, India, B, South Africa, C, Afghanistan, or D, Egypt?
Do you want to go first?
I'm going to go with South Africa.
Okay, Glenn.
That was going to be my guess, so I'm going to stick with it.
Oh, my God.
Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah.
It's okay.
You're both wrong. The answer is, in fact, C, Afghanistan.
Oh, all right. There was a war back then, too, huh?
Yes, yeah. And they could use it for the remake Sherlock as well.
There you go, yeah.
Question number three. Sherlock Holmes has an older brother named Mycroft, who is much smarter than his famous sibling.
True.
Yes.
Indeed.
He works in some mysterious capacity for the government, but he spends most of his time at his club in London. But what is the name of the club?
Oh, God.
Is that A, the Hellfire Club, B, the Diogenes Club, C, the Drones Club, or D, the Empire Club?
I'll let you go first.
Oh, yes. Man.
Glenn knows the answer.
I know the answer.
I can tell. I'm going to go with B.
The Diogenes Club.
Correct.
Glenn.
Which means I'm going with B as well.
The answer is, in fact, B.
Wow.
The Diogenes Club.
Nice.
Good. Yes. I don't know why. That just felt right.
The Hellfire Club was a real places, but it also appears in fictional books. The Drones Club. Points to anyone who knows.
The Drones Club?
Yeah.
I don't know that.
Oh.
It is the club that Bertie Wooster belonged to in P.G. Woodhouse's stories.
And I'm just about to start reading those.
There you go.
How about
and
that?
The Empire Club, there's a very deep cut, was the club that both Frasier and Niles tried to get into in the one episode of
nice.
Frasier in Seattle. Question number four. Eventually, Sherlock Holmes's creator, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, grew tired of his famous creation and decided to kill him off, along with his arch nemesis Moriarty, in one final fight in a story called The Final Problem. Despite hurling him off the Reichenbach Falls, public outcry and demand eventually forced Doyle to resurrect the detective, or rather figure out how he survived. But what was the name of the story in which he returns? Is that A, The Adventure of the Empty House, B, The Adventure of the Dancing Men, C, The Adventure of the Solitary Cyclist, or D, The Adventure of the Second Stain?
Okay, I don't know this one. But I like The Adventure of the Second Stain. That just sounds cool.
I'm going to go with The Adventure of the Dancing Men.
Okay, well, I can tell you they're all real stories, and they all appear in the Return of Sherlock Holmes series. The Second Stain was actually the last in that series. Oh, okay. The one that he returns is The Adventure of the Empty House.
Okay.
Although I will say, in between the time that he killed him off and writing The Empty House, he then wrote Hound of the Baskervilles, but The Hound of the Baskervilles takes place before.
Right.
Gotcha.
So in order to try to give a little back to the fans. Mm. And there was like a public outcry.
Oh, there was. When
he killed him off. In fact, the Strand magazine, which was where most of his stories were published, nearly went out of business
because
canceled their subscriptions because they killed off Sherlock Holmes. There was a rumor that like there were people in London wearing black armbands in mourning for him, although that might have been spread by Arthur Conan Doyle's son. It's unsure. And question number five. Eventually, the great consulting detective was allowed to retire to the Sussex Downs. But what hobby did Sherlock Holmes adopt in his retirement? Was that A, stamp collecting, B, bird taxidermy, C, watercolor painting, or D, beekeeping? Sarah.
Oh, man. It really just spreads a lot of different options. I'm going to go with beekeeping.
Okay, Glenn.
All right, just to be something different, even though I was thinking beekeeping, I'll go with watercolor painting.
Oh, all nice. Right.
Well, you should have stuck with your gut reaction because the answer is D, beekeeping.
Just seems like something he'd be into.
And you would know that if you watched the Ian McKellen adaptation of Sherlock Holmes, where he played a much older Sherlock Holmes in retirement and he keeping kept bees.
Very nice. Well Very done, cool. Sarah.
Thank you. I think you still won.
I think it's a tie.
I think it's a tie.
Is it a tie? Okay.
Which means you're both responsible for bringing beer next time.
All right. Fair enough.
And now we turn to our listener question segment, in which we answer a question from you, the listener. And this week's you, the listener, is Kristen with a K. And she didn't actually specifically say Kristen with a K. I'm just saying Kristen starts with a K as opposed to, an F. And she asks the following.
Okay.
What can I do to convince a friend who claims they hate watching black and white films?
Wow. Well, there's a few black and whites she could show somebody.
Really fantastic.
My thing with black and white films, because I have a lot of friends who say they don't like black and white films. I think the problem isn't the fact that they're black and white, because that shouldn't be a problem for anyone. I think the problem is older style acting.
Correct.
Is what people have a problem with.
Sure.
And because it's older style acting, it tends to be in black and white films, because black and white films are the older films.
You know what I say is to watch a comedy that's in black and white of some kind, like a good comedy. And it could be anything from like a Cary Grant movie. I was thinking like Arsenic and Old Lace or a Marx Brothers film. I mean,
no, I would say Arsenic and Old Lace still has old style acting in it, although not from all of them, just from a couple of the
Bringing up Baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, It Happened One Night, something like that. Or even, hell, if you don't want to go back that far, watch The Artist. That was in black and white, even though it was a recent movie.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't love The Artist, but it's modern acting in black and white form, which is nice.
See, and I really love, like on the total opposite side of the spectrum, I love a good black and white thriller. I think there is just something so polished about like a Lauren Bacall noir style black and white film.
Well,
I think
there
is
Lauren
just
Bacall,
something.
Not, you know.
Well, any of them really. Lauren Bacall, Katherine Hepburn, any of the classic Ingrid Bergman, any of the classic thriller.
So any woman in a black.
I'm just thinking of all of my favorites off the top of my head.
I mean, I would have gone with Humphrey Bogart.
Humphrey
but I guess
Bogart
Lauren
as well on the
that.
Other spectrum, yes. But any of them, I think a classic thriller.
Gaslight.
Or anything directed by Albert Hitchcock.
Yeah, Casablanca.
Whenever he went color, which I think was.
It was late.
It was like the Birds might have been like.
Birds is black and white.
Birds is color.
But then I don't know that there's that much before that was color. Because he was black and white even to Psycho, which didn't really need to be black and white.
Right.
Yes, any good Alfred Hitchcock black and white film, I think is a mind changer.
See, and I'd go something like 12 Angry Men, which I think is an older black and white film, but has more naturalistic acting. What you would consider modern acting style.
Yeah.
But still black and white and still very good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. There's a plethora of great black and white films.
Or don't try to convince them, because some people are just going to say, I don't like it. And it's just a struggle to have to deal with people. It just means you get to enjoy all of them yourself.
Yeah.
Unless this is a sort of, I want to be in a relationship with this person and they don't like black and white films and I can't be in a relationship with somebody who doesn't like a black and white film, in which case this is the wrong podcast to be writing into. But good luck with that. A lot of good options there.
Yeah.
There's also a couple of good Woody Allen comedies that were black and white that are not old but are in black and white. I would probably say don't start with Schindler's List in terms of black and white films to show them. Especially not if it's date night. But whatever your thing is. So there you go. Kristen with a K, not an F. Hopefully we answered your question. And now it's time for recommendations, where we each recommend something for you to watch that isn't Sherlock Holmes in New York. And I will start. I'm going to recommend a television series featuring the late, great Jeremy Brett, in which he pulls off perhaps the greatest portrayal of the famous consulting detective. The series title changed from series to series, depending on what series of stories they were doing. But it starts as The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And it ran for something like 10 years.
Wow.
And they did two of the four novels and almost all of the short story adaptations. And he is by far the best Sherlock Holmes, even toward the end where it started affecting his health, because he went full on into Sherlock Holmes and sort of had some mental issues because of it. And he ended up getting sick and putting on weight and it was a whole thing. But even the later ones are very good.
Jeremy Brett.
And he's as close to a Sherlock Holmes as you can.
Outstanding.
And they were also very suspenseful, but also had the sort of Holmesian humor, which you sometimes got in the stories, just because he is so unconventional. That it seems funny in surrounding him with the normal sort of, there's a lot of like leaping around and jumping for joy. And
what a great recommendation. I can't believe I forgot about that till you said it just now.
I loved
Jeremy Brett as Sherlock Holmes.
Yes. And two very good Watsons as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the more re-examined way of playing Watson, which is he's actually a good sidekick. He's not smarter than Holmes, but he is level-headed and sort of even more street smart, which Holmes is not necessarily the most socially street smart, which Watson had more of in the story. Anyway, that's my recommendation. Excellent. Sarah,
very nice.
Your recommendation.
I am also recommending, though not specifically Sherlock Holmes, I'm also recommending a favorite detective series of mine. And it ran for 8 seasons starting in 2002. And it was starring Michael Kitchen and an actress named Honeysuckle Weeks.
That's a very good
show. And it's an excellent series called Foyle's War.
Yes.
And I absolutely love
it. That ran eight
seasons.
Did I miss some of them?
I don't know, but it ran for 8 seasons. We had the box sets of it growing up on DVD. And it was a fantastic show because it was one of those detective shows where you were on the edge of your seat. It was a very cool whodunit, but it wasn't overwhelming. There wasn't a needless amount of gratuitous violence. There wasn't anything that was like completely ridiculous. It was well acted, well polished. Honeysuckle Weeks as his driver is like the most likable character.
Yeah, she's very good.
She's so, so good. And all of them are consistently good for all 8 seasons. There is not a season that I think dipped in quality from start to finish. And it's very, very, very enjoyable.
He's very good in that.
He's extremely good in that.
And I think you have a family member that loves Foyle's War as well, besides you.
It's possible my mother
loves it.
Okay. It's excellent. Yeah. It takes place in World War II, so it's got that historical edge to it as well.
Well, it's also World War II, like Southern England, where like not much is going on, but everybody's in a complete panic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also, did it extend beyond World War II?
It did.
I stopped watching it round about when World War II ended, I think there's some series after World War II.
Yeah, I want to say, if I remember correctly, like the first 5 seasons span World War II, and then the last 3 seasons are kind of later in life, later in career, post-war recovery stuff.
Yeah, I think I didn't watch those.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's very good. They are a classic dynamic partnership that I love.
Yes, they're very good and have very good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And his character I like because it's sort of grumpy, but he's also like super nice and likable.
Yeah, very good show.
Yeah. Glenn, your recommendation. Nice.
I guess I don't have a buddy show or movie to to bring up here, but I do have a great movie that involved digging tunnels, much like this one did.
Oh. No.
And that is the 1963 World War II film, The Great Escape, starring Steve McQueen and a host of other people.
Not so great.
Oh, I like The Great Escape.
Well, I mean, it didn't work out so well.
The escape itself,
not so great.
The Great Escape and The Great Roundup and Murder.
Yeah. Yes.
I love that movie. It's a great film. So, 1963. Just
couldn't get over the second fence. Anyway. Yeah. I mean, it was a weird escape attempt.
It was a bit of an interesting plan. Get the motor?
Anyway.
And based on a true story.
Three very good recommendations. Start with the movie. You can get that out of the way quickly. And then dive into the television series. Because Sherlock Holmes is 9 series, I think. And Spoils War is 8. So
you've got time.
Make sure you finish them up. Because next week we have all more recommendations. And with that, we've reached the conclusion of another episode of the Better with Booze Film Club. But fear not. We will be back next week. And until then, I would like to thank my co-hosts and all of you for tuning in. If you'd like to be featured in our listener questions section, feel free to get in touch with us by emailing bwbfilmclub@gmail.com. That's bwbfilmclub@gmail.com. And I leave you with this final thought. If any Bond were to play Sherlock Holmes, surely it should have been Timothy Dalton, no? And of course, come on, you Hatters.